Our speaker today is Paul Efron, sharing with us on his experience and the principle of living with hope. Paul.
Wow. Where is she? What, she leave? Oh, my God. Was that amazing? I mean, oh, my God. Don wanted to jump up here. He didn't, you know, like one of those things. Anyway, this is amazing. It's truly incredible, and it's a privilege and a blessing to be here this morning. Hope, you know, that's my guiding principle in life. That's my story. There's a lot of you here, because I see you, from various recovering communities around town. And that's what we sell in those places also, is hope. And it's a pretty cool thing. It just happens to be Recovery Month in the, yeah, coincidentally, which is God's way of remaining anonymous. I know you know that, Beth. And coincidentally, I'm here the week after Russell Spatz to clean up all of his nonsense. And he's here to make sure I don't really mess up. So I love life today. I've got a fantasy island kind of life that was a tragic experience for many, many years. So I'm going to share a little bit about how I ended up in a Unity Church here in September of 2012, and it would have to start back, in case you have a hearing problem, I'm from New York City. And I'm a product of the 60s. And the 60s were tune in, turn on, and drop out. And I did all of the above. I'm from Queens in New York City. I grew up right near Shea Stadium. And in 1965, as the Elton John song goes, I was 17. And we snuck into Shea Stadium. Or we broke down the fences, I should say. Myself and a few of my associates. And the Beatles had come to Shea Stadium at that time, and we witnessed the Beatles in the summer of 1965. I woke up 15 years later. That sums up why I'm here. I'll give you a few other little snippets along the way, but I actually, one of the reasons I have Russell here, as he told you last week, he's a trial attorney. And we're trying to track down the remaining Beatles to bring a class action lawsuit against what happened to my life. So, Russell, we will put you on retainer. You'll get your normal 30% or whatever it is these days. And also, I like to laugh, in case you didn't figure that out, because my life was such a tragedy for so long. I was such a hopeless, despicable human being. I hurt everybody that I came in contact with. Physically, emotionally, spiritually, financially. If you and I met in the 60s or 70s, you came out the worse for wear. And by the grace of God and a transformation that happened in my life, since 1980, I choose to think it's the reverse. And I've been working on making it the reverse on a daily basis, as often as I can. You know, there's a very unique week in life. I was laughing when you're talking about Unity Prayer Day. It's September 13th. September 13th is also my wedding anniversary. So if there's anyone who needs Unity prayers, it's my wife on the 13th of September. Because I'm flying up Thursday morning. That's the day I'm leaving, you know. I have a beautiful wife. I have two beautiful, beautiful children. As a matter of fact, my son, who lives down here, he's 27, and he came over this morning. He needed to get something. And I was in the other room. And he walks in and he says, "Father, or should I call you Pastor?" Because he knew I was coming to church this morning, which is not where I normally hang out. In addition to Thursday being Unity Prayer Day, Tuesday is the 11-year anniversary of the day this world changed. I happened to be on the George Washington Bridge the day that happened. At 8:45 in the morning, I had a 9 o'clock appointment in Fairlawn, New Jersey. And I got stuck in New Jersey for the next 3 days. A day that totally changed the entire world, every way we look, every way we travel. And yet, at some point down in history, it's going to be looked at as happened for the good. I don't know how or why, but that's just the way it works. That's the way he works. See, there's a power in charge of this whole deal. And he sees the whole mosaic. And we're only responsible for seeing a compartment, a daily compartment, the small piece of the mosaic. And that's more often than I can live in that moment, then the less problems I have. And the happier I am and the better example of his peace and love I am to you and whoever else may need any help. And that's what gets me excited today. You know, Bev spoke about not getting too excited. I don't live there anymore. I mean, it says it in some of the stuff I read, too. I just don't buy it. I live on excitement. I mean, for what it may be, one day I won't. But today I do. But now, equally, if not more importantly, Tuesday we have the anniversary of 9/11. Thursday is Unity Day and my wedding anniversary. 1 week from tonight is the Rosh Hashanah holiday, which is the Jewish New Year, where I'll be in Temple in New York, in Long Island. It's year 5,773. Do the math. That's I'm not even going to go anywhere beyond that. Just a very, very, very long time ago. And no, I'll be good. I really will. Anyway, I took a bunch of notes today. I told Bev before when I got here. By the way, my mom is so pleased. May she rest in peace. Not only with where my life went, et cetera, but when I got an email from Bev, you know, thanking me for coming today or being here today. And she says, and please park in the spot designated minister parking. So what I did when I pulled up, before I got out of the car, I took about 10 pictures. They'll be on Facebook tonight, I promise you that. And Mom, what can I tell you? It could have been a lot worse. So, you know, and these holidays are pretty much where I'm going to go a little bit in this talk today, because it speaks of hope. And we have like this real cool thing. I know Unity is not like a real church. Like it's like a No, I mean, it's like Christianity Light or something, whatever it is. But it's like they do these songs. Where did Samantha go? I can't believe it. I was going to take her on the road with me and she left. Anyway. You know, like it's not the normal thing in this place, right? Okay. I mean, you can tell that. I mean, it's very cool, not normal, but still not normal. So the scenario is that where I was going to go today is, in the Jewish religion, these holidays that we're coming up to, they're the beginning of the world, we think, or pretty well written, on Rosh Hashanah. You go to temple for a couple of days, and they go. You take an inventory of your year. This is what we do, what I do. And you look at all of the good you've done, all of the bad you've done, because none of us are walking on water in this joint. And then 10 days after Rosh Hashanah, you come to the holiday called Yom Kippur. And Yom Kippur means the Day of Atonement, or at-one-ment, being one with God. And it's a very serious day. You fast for the entire day, and you go through your past life, this past year. And I have done this thing, and I sit in temple the entire day. I'm not religious on any level. But that day, I'm in temple the whole day. And I reflect. As you were doing the silent meditation, we reflect. But I play this little game. Okay? And And to me, it's worked for a long time, so I'm going to keep doing it. I have two ledgers in my mind. And I happen to journal an awful lot. But so I take out one of the ledgers, and on this ledger is all of the things that I have done that are objectionable to God in the past 12 months. Insulting a person, not tithing the right amount, telling a lie, you know, whatever, you know, one of the seven deadly sins, whatever they are. By the way, here's something you could use in your service, the seven deadly sins. You heard of them, right? But here's a way to remember them, pagels. Pride, anger, greed, gluttony, lust, envy, and sloth. Pagels. So we got to bring something new to unity on this holiday. That's an awakening. So anyway, so I have this ledger, and I look at all the things I've done wrong. Then I have this other ledger at all the things that God's done wrong to me this year. You know, I lost a business deal. This one I had a fight with. You know, whatever it may be. And I sit there in temple, and I just say to myself, you know what, God? You, from the place on high, I know with all of your ability to love and every human being, and me from this little place down here, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to forgive you for all of that. I fully believe in my heart of hearts you're going to forgive me. Let's call it even, and we'll start from scratch tomorrow. So that's what I do on Yom Kippur. Okay, it's a real cool way to end the fast for me. The other thing I was thinking about today, I guess I got to tell you a little bit about how I got some hope. So in 1965, we snuck in there, and I was part of that whole Woodstock generation, and I got into drugs and booze and just some horrific, horrific things. Without sharing the whole litany of the 15 years of horrors, I'll share two. One of them, in the mid-70s, when I had already ruined a marriage, I had already been arrested 3 times, maybe 4, I had already been to 2 mental hospitals, maybe 3, or as I came to find out after the 5th one, houses for the very, very nervous. That's what happened to me in New York. But this particular incident I'm going to share with you happened on February 1st, 1976. You'll find out why in a minute I remember that date. It's a date in my life story. I was married at the time. I had a good job, even though I was not clean. I was using a heroin substitute called methadone, and I was just, you know, I was doing whatever I was doing. And I have a cousin in Pikesville, Maryland, my first cousin, Mark. And I decided, because I was the black sheep of the family, you could figure out why. I just told you why. Now I'm doing very well. I have a beautiful daughter. My daughter is 37 in December, so back then she was 3 or 4 or 2. Well, you do the math. It was February 1976, maybe 2. But I had this game plan. I wanted to invite my cousin Mark, who lived in Maryland, to come to New York City. And I was going to take him to the top Broadway play at that time so that he would then go home to my uncle in Maryland, my Uncle Mush, and my mother's brother, and tell him how well I was doing. That was my plan. Let me share with you what happened. Mark and Arlene came in. The top rated show on Broadway at that time was a show called Equus. It was with someone named Anthony Perkins, God rest his soul, I never got a chance to make my amends. You'll understand why in a minute. I invited them up to come see Equus at the 45th Street at Helen Hayes Theater on Broadway. They drove 210 miles from Pikesville, Maryland. They came to my apartment in Bayside, Queens. We got in my car. We drove to Manhattan. I took them for this sumptuous steak dinner at Rossoff Steakhouse. I figured if there were cell phones looking back at that time, Mark would have gone into the bathroom during dinner to call my uncle and say, "You're not going to believe it. He's amazing. I mean, he has this beautiful apartment. He has this nice car. His wife is great. The kid is great. He's incredible. He has turned around." Sadly, there were no cell phones, and we went to the theater. I had second row center seats at the Helen Hayes Theater. Has anyone here ever been to Broadway, by the way? I know we're in Florida. Oh, great. Okay. Russell, but you weren't on stage. Stay tuned. Second row center, Helen Hayes Theater, the show called Equus, which I still to this day don't know what it was about. But Anthony Perkins is standing there talking to a horse. Anthony Perkins is a psychiatrist. This much I remember. And it's a very quiet play. He asks the audience a question, Anthony Perkins. The other 1,800 people in the theater knew it's what was known as a rhetorical question. Sadly, I did not get that memo. So at a very quiet moment of this play, February 1st, 1976, Helen Hayes Theater, Broadway, New York City, the question is asked. I jumped up from my seat, second row, pointed to him, and said, "That's because my name is Paul Efron." Let me share with you what happened from that moment in rapid fashion for the next 12 months of my life. I believe to this day, 50% of that theater thought I was in the show. Nobody understood it. Believe me, it would have made as much sense for me jumping up and yelling at this guy as whatever was going on stage. So we'll put those to the side for a minute. The one thing I can promise you, there were three people that knew I wasn't. Now, everything I tell you from this point forward is like in those movies, as told to. This is an as told to moment. My wife, Sharon, and my cousin, Mark, look behind my back as I'm standing up, as if, what just happened? They dragged me down. 10 minutes later, we did it again. And that began my round of mental hospitals in the greater metropolitan area, ending up in Creedmoor State Hospital. So if I ever get short on hope, what I do when I go to New York, I drive by Creedmoor State Hospital, where I lived in a rocking chair. And I waited for that call of medication time. And I accepted that's where I ended up. I accepted it. Okay, I made the wrong tongue, the wrong choice, whatever, however, and this is my lot in life. I became suicidal 6 months after that place or the place afterwards, and I tried to kill myself. Not a social suicide attempt, a real dyed-in-the-wool, massive, intentional drug overdose. I got a massive amount of sleeping pills from the pharmacy, and I took 26 three-grain Tylenols, which anyone from the 60s knows it would kill any row of people here. And what happened, God had other plans. And I know that today. I know that so certainly in my mind. I was in a coma for 6.5 days in Long Island Jewish Hospital. And on the third day of the coma, they called my wife and my parents into the consultation room, and they said, "Look, he's not going to make it. If he happens to live, he's going to be a vegetable. So accept right now. Don't waste your time coming here, the 10 minutes that you can visit every 2 hours, and accept that he's gone right now. Thank God they didn't accept that. They kept coming. They kept holding my hand. They kept saying their prayers. That wasn't the end of my story, but that was the most traumatic year of my story. 1979, after all of that trouble, my wife at the time, Sharon, suggested it would be better if I left. Not only if I left the apartment, but if I left New York. And it turned out to be the greatest thing in the world, because I ended up in Florida. And I come to Florida, and that's where I found out about hope. That's where I found out that I don't have to die from that thing that was killing me. And I've spent the last 32 and a half years operating. I know you had to leave. You get an exclusion. Mom told me before. No problem. Whoa. That's a CBS exit if I ever heard one right there. Wow. So I came here, and on the 12th of February, 1980, I met a small group of people that had just began a new deal to help drug addicts not die. And for the last 32 and a half years, that's been my calling. Okay? It's not a paid calling, just like yours, Bev. I don't get paid for it. I get joys inside by seeing what I see here 30 years, 21 years, a guy in the back from day one. You can't put a price tag on that. So I spend every day trying to get closer to God by finding more people in the gutter. And the more people I find in the gutter, the closer I get to God. It's like an amazing thing. You know, I was thinking this thing before I came in. And I had no idea where I was going to go with this. But because it's coming into this holiday for me, one of my terrible character defects that I constantly try to work on is gossip. It's an absolute killer. I don't know if anybody else here has that defect. I do. And in the Jewish religion, we call it Lashon Hara. It means the evil inclination. Now, let me share with you why it's so terrible. In the Old Testament, Russell, I had to give a little credit to the Old Testament. I heard your tape last week, okay? There's a little Old Testament stuff. In the Old Testament, it speaks to Lashon Hara as being more severe than idolatry, praying to idols, adultery, cheating on your spouse, and murder combined. Combined. So the next time you're ready to tell a story about someone to someone, think about what I'm about to tell you now. Why could it be? How could it be that dramatically negative? I'm going to tell you why. If I tell you, call you to the side to say, wow, you want to hear what he did? Here's what I'm doing. I am making you come down to my level by listening to this tale. I am demeaning myself by having to put someone else down, not in their presence, by making you listen to this tale. And I'm also obviously damaging the person that I'm telling the tale about. So there's a story from olden times, which I just try to process and try to internalize as often as possible. It was this rabbi in olden times, and he was talking very negatively about one of his colleagues in another town. Every time someone would come there and say, well, you know what rabbi said? Oh, you don't know about him. He does terrible. He does this. And everything he would say was terrible stories about this other person. Finally, one day, 8 or 10 years later, he has like this spiritual experience. He says, I don't know why I'm doing this. I can't keep doing this. I have to go make my amends to the rabbi. He travels 3 days to this other rabbi's location. And he goes there asking for forgiveness. He says, I'm sorry, I've been doing it, talking. I can't believe what I've been saying about you. Please forgive me. The rabbi looks at him. He says, you know what? I think I can forgive you. I'd like you to do one thing for me first. What's that? When you get back to your village, I'd like you to go in your house and get a pillow. And I'd like you to cut the pillow, go outside, cut the pillow open, and spread all the feathers in the wind. And when you can gather every feather that has been scattered in the wind, we're even. Because what happens when I tell you a story, I don't know how many 30, 50, 80 people you're going to tell. You put it on Facebook, on email, on the internet. The damage is so dramatic. So the next time you're about to do it, try not to. And you know what? I mean, look, I could go for 9,000 years here, obviously, but I'm looking. And we. Oh, by the way, I'm really not speaking overtime because Bev leaned over to me and said, I went a little long. You can go till 10 after 12. So I want you to know, Russ, I'm not violating any of these deals here, okay? And all I'm telling you, really, whatever you believe or don't believe in, a grateful heart is the answer. And find somebody that you can help, and your life will be enriched. Thanks very much.